Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Another crazy week, another scary week. Things are happening with increasing frequency, heavy stuff worldwide, and I get uncomfortable, and this was a week that made me very uncomfortable. And we're going to talk about it a bit tonight. First, though, this is a call-in show. In case you want to call in and chat with me, talk with me, agree with me, disagree with me, express your point of view, the number's on the screen in front of you, 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. I am happy to hear from you. The worst thing that occurred, in my opinion, this past week is what happened in Nevada with a fellow by the name of Charles Bundy. You heard about it. You read about it. It was all over the newspapers and on television, a prime example of civil unrest. Charles Bundy has probably spent all his life in Nevada. He raises cows. He has had a dispute with the federal government since 1993. That comes to what? 21 years. It has to do with his cows and where they eat, cow grazing. His cows have been grazing on federally owned land. Bundy refuses to pay for his cows using federal land to eat. He feels that he has a right to do it. He feels the government cannot tell him what to do. He also believes, with a small minority in this country, that there is no federal authority. The authority in every area is the county sheriff. There is no one stronger than, more important than, bigger than, more authoritative than the county sheriff. The federal government says, you're going to use our land, you got to pay us for it. You know, you're eating away the grass. Well, you know, it makes sense, because if Bundy used my land and he ate my grass, he's got to pay me for it. Anyhow, the rent wasn't much. It was like $1.35 per cow. He's had a lot of cows eating there for 23 years. The federal government has taken him to court several times. In each and every instance, the courts decided on the side of the federal government. They said, no, this isn't your land. You got to pay the government to use it. Well, the government finally got fed up. And typical of our federal government today, they didn't take the correct means, in my opinion, to obviate the problem. What they did was this. They had a judgment against Bundy for something like $1 million. Take him to court. Attach his cows. Take him to court to enforce the judgment and work it out. Rather than do that, the government says, hey, now they got a judgment for a lot of money. They should try to enforce it. No, instead the government says, you got to get your cows off that land because you are endangering desert tortoises. Desert tortoises, okay? You are endangering desert tortoises. I have to laugh when I hear this, because think back for a moment. How many nuclear bombs has our government, it's in the hundreds, my friends, exploded over the Nevada desert for test purposes in the last 20, 30 years? Tons of them, okay? And I think, with all due respect, I'm laughing at this, more damage was done to these desert tortoises by the nuclear bombs going off than by the cows grazing on this land. So again, we have a situation where the government took the wrong means to do what they should do, and so now we've got a real conflict. Bundy's wrong, and from my perspective, the government is wrong. The problem was it came to a head. The government came and started taking the cows off the land, saying, we are taking the cows off, we're going to take them into custody and so forth. And what happened? 1,000 people showed up from all over the United States to support Bundy. These were what they called militiamen. They came dressed in military camouflage uniforms, each carrying a gun, understand again, from every part of the United States. They are opposed to federal authority. And they said, and you, if you watch TV, you heard some of them being interviewed, if the government takes one shot, we're going to shoot back. Now, this is what's happening. This is why these guys, by the way, love the NRA, because they need their guns, a lot of people in this country believe, because they feel that the government is not doing what it should, and the government may try to suppress their rights. Forget about gun rights, like letting Bundy's cows graze on this land. And if the government tries to push them, they're going to be ready to push back with their weapons. Okay, they're not afraid. So, this was a real head-up match on. Could have been big trouble over the weekend. Because if someone acted wrong, there could have been firing. And I don't know what would have followed this thing. It really bothered me. It caused me great concern. I was scared. That's the only way I can describe it. I thought finally we had reached the point where there was going to be an armed conflict. And then who knows what would have happened. Fortunately, the federal government backed off. You know, I say they should have, but on the other hand, if we don't have federal authority, do we have any authority? Okay? So that's another problem. But they backed off, and they're trying to negotiate and talk this thing over now. We'll see what happens. I think both sides lost in this situation. Which brings me to today. This is the second thing that is bothering me. The state of Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin Republican Party today voted, yeah, they voted to support recession. Not recession, I'm sorry, secession from the union at their convention, their state GOP convention, which runs from May 2nd to May 4th. The Wisconsin Republicans have put up a vote to their membership. Do we support secession? Now, I don't know if this is healthy. I can remember back when Abraham Lincoln got elected, you know, the state said they were going to secede, and they did, and there was a long war, and they got their asses knocked in the South. I don't think there would be a long war if one, two, or even 10 states tried to secede at the present time. The power of the federal government is so much stronger than state governments, I think they would be squashed overnight. On the other hand, if they were successful in their secession, you tell me how a state like Wisconsin is going to stand up to a Russia or to a China. Interestingly, Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, an ultra-conservative, one of those guys that the Tea Party people really like, he does not support this effort for secession. He is opposed to it. He wants to run for president. He needs the Tea Party people, on the other hand. And it's the Tea Party people, by the way, who drove this thing to a vote in the upcoming GOP convention. It does reflect what's happening in Wisconsin, Tea Party influence. It represents a bad thing. I mean, this is just terrible. Here we are, supposedly one of the greatest countries in the world. Now these people, these idiots, want to take us apart piece by piece because they cannot have their way in everything. A very bad situation, in my opinion. Then we have a study that just came out this week by Harvard University. And the study had to do with the federal debt. The Harvard study said, interestingly, the cost of our debt, if each person were to pay an equal amount for the debt, each member of our society, each American would pay an equal amount to pay off the debt, it comes to $106,000 per person. Now, that's a lot of money, $106,000 per person, not only in today's economy, but in any type of economy. However, here's my thought. We have a bunch of rich guys out there who've got a hell of a lot of money, who have been spending and are prepared to spend even more money in the upcoming election. They're spending in the millions of dollars per man per year. I'm talking about the rich guys spending their money, and some into the billions to influence and control our elections, whether for Congress or for president or for both. Wouldn't it be simpler if they just paid off the debt? It would be simpler if they just paid off the debt. All they have to do is go out, and the money they're going to spend for political campaigns, give it, donate it to the United States Treasury, and pay off the corporate, pay off the debt that is owed. I will bet you that within two elections, the congressional election upcoming and the presidential election, this country would be without debt. And if that's the case, we're in terrific shape. And they would have done, these gentlemen, a far better thing for the United States than what they are doing now. Which brings me to an interesting topic. You're going to love what I'm going to talk about now. And we're told the economy is better. Even though the market went down a couple of days last week, the market's the highest it's ever been. Banks are making a ton of money. Certain corporations are making a lot of money. The big guys are happy. No one cares about the middle class, which really doesn't exist anymore. No one cares about the poor people. The rich are getting richer. Well, a question arises, and I want to share my thoughts with you on this. Is the economy really better for companies, for all companies, and especially companies that rely upon people to buy their product, okay? And I say this, I do not believe the U.S. economy, okay, is better for many major retail chains because they're closing thousands of stores, as I will show you. And why? Because their profits are down. They have a couple of problems. One of them is, and this is what they explain as their problem, and I don't buy it. They say, well, millions of Americans are now shopping online. Well, that's true, but it only amounts to 20% of their sales are being done online. Not that big in the overall picture. The real reason, from my perspective, is that there has been a slow, steady death of the middle class. Median household incomes are down in the last 5 years, okay? While people's bills keep going up, the income is down, but your bills keep going up, which means everyone's disposable income is shrinking. This has to be bad news for retailers. Stores are closing, as I'm going to show you, and this will accelerate these store closings over the next 10 years. This is a pending doom economically in this country, a pending doom, big corporations, not the banks, not the rich guys, but those that depend on people to survive. This is a pending doom, which is referred to by many as the Great United States Retail Apocalypse. So, now let's look at some of the facts which will support and justify what I have said. Today, 1 billion square feet, you heard me, 1 billion square feet of retail space in the United States sits vacant. Last month, Radio Shack announced closing more than 1,000 stores this year. They will close more than 1,000 stores this year. Recently, Staples announced it was closing 225 stores. Office Depot, you know, these are all places where the quote-unquote middle class would shop, okay? Office Depot, they recently announced that their sales have declined 13 quarters in a row. JCPenney, they've been in trouble forever, but they also announced recently that they are closing this year, 33 more stores. JCPenney also announced that they lost $586 million in the second quarter of 2013 alone. Sears Roebuck has closed 300 stores since 2010. It announced it will close 500 more stores this year, either of Sears or Kmart's. Sales numbers have declined at Sears for 27 quarters in a row. They've gone down 27 quarters in a row. Target is eliminating 475 jobs and have decided not to fill the 700 that are already empty. Macy's, Big Macy's, is closing 5 stores and eliminating 2,500 jobs. McDonald's announced that their sales in established U.S. locations, locations in the United States, not worldwide, in the month of January alone were down 3.3%. Now, the bankers and these rich mucky-mucks, they don't eat at McDonald's, okay? The middle class and the poor people eat at McDonald's because it's cheap to eat there. Their sales are down 3.3%. Walmart. Now, who shops at Walmart? The big bankers and the rich guys? No. Walmart claims it is struggling, and it may have to close this year 100 underperforming super centers in rural locations in the United States. Okay? Now, moving on. Quiznos and Sbarro's have both filed recently Chapter 11s in bankruptcy. Wow. All this is a wow. Will any of this turn around? Well, it can only turn around, and I'm telling you this, if the middle class comes back. You have to have a middle class that has good paying jobs. And I don't see it in the immediate future or even in beyond the immediate future, okay? Our labor force today in the United States is at a 35-year low. Do you know that 70% of all Americans under the age of 55, 75% of all Americans under the age of 55 are not working. The bottom line is there's not enough jobs for everyone. We sent them all to other countries. College graduates, for example, are taking low-income jobs, okay, and part-time jobs. I'm talking about Americans, college grads, bachelor degrees, 22 to 27, okay? They are not working at jobs that require the bachelor degrees they worked so hard and spent so much money to obtain. 44% of our college graduates between the age of 22 and 27, 44% in 2012 worked at those type jobs, jobs that did not require a bachelor's degree. Our middle class is heading for extinction. As it does, so does our economy. The only way everything comes back for everyone, not just the big guys at the top, is you have to have a middle class that's making money. And I don't see anything happen in the near future that is going to change which presently exists. Now, let me tell you another thing that's happening to big business. And this one I'm happy about. This one I've got, and you'll be happy too. J.P. Morgan, one of the biggest banks in the world, one of the biggest banks that caused this problem we had with the mortgages in 2008, that caused this recession that we are still coming out of, we're still in it. Don't believe what the big guys in the banks tell you. Okay. They are going to fire. Okay? They're going to fire thousands of employees this year and close 15,000 branch banks this year because they're not doing a sufficient mortgage business anymore. Mortgages were one of their big product lines, and for them, it's effectively dead because their revenue stream from mortgage payments are drying up. And the reason is people are not buying houses. We heard, oh, the market, people are starting to buy houses. Well, the investors buying those houses today are not people who need to borrow money. They are cash buyers. This doesn't help a bank like J.P. Morgan that relies on mortgage investment. Okay? So they're screwing up. And it wasn't 15,000 that are going to close. By the way, it's 2,000 they anticipate closing branches this year. I think it's good that J.P. Morgan is taking this beating. I'm sorry some of their employees who don't make a hell of a lot of money are going to get laid off, but J.P. Morgan deserves to get it shoved up their behinds. We live in a world of turmoil, the danger of war, especially today. I mean, look what's going on with Russia, Ukraine, Crimea. Look what's going on with China and Japan. Look what's going on between Russia and China. I have to laugh again. 6 months ago, the geniuses in our Congress, Republican and Democrats alike, were saying, we have to cut the military budget. We don't need so much money. There's, you know, we no more war in Afghanistan, no more war in Iraq. We're out of these wars at the end of this year. We don't need to put all this money in. And what happens? Russia walks into Crimea. We have world tension there, I don't have to tell you. China's racking the South Seas out there. They're going to do something big shortly. And Russia and China are in bed together all over and in every possible way. So let's look at how we stand militarily with certain things. I'm talking about now combat aircraft readiness, fighter planes, bombers that are ready to go now. The country with the most combat-ready aircraft is the United States. We have 3,318 combat aircraft ready to go to war. Number two is Russia. They only have 1,900. We've got 1,400 more combat planes than they do. China's number three, they've got 1,500. Let's look at North Korea for a moment, because you never know what the hell they're going to do. North Korea only has 661 combat-ready aircraft. Again, we have 3,318. South Korea has 458. And, you know, that's pretty close. South Korea can help themselves, perhaps with a little help from us. So we're in good shape, airplane-wise, combat airplane-wise. Let's look now at Navy tonnage. Navy is important. Navy has come back into importance. You need all those naval vessels out there now. You may not need a battleship, but you need the cruisers and the destroyers and the aircraft carriers. Here's the story on Navy tonnage. The number one country with the most Navy tonnage in the world today is the United States. We have 3,416 tons of ships. Big, 3,416,000 tons. Russia's number two. They're always number two. They've only got 845,000 tons. We've got 3,416,000 tons. China's number three. They've only got 708 million tons, or 1,000 tons, rather. 708,000 tons. Again, we've got 3,416,000 tons. There is a problem, though. Our Congress, you know, they authorize spending the money, have disregarded improving our Navy over the last 5 to 10 years. They haven't spent enough money on new naval vessels. We were in land wars in places like Afghanistan. So they did not put the money into naval vessels. China, in the meantime, the sleeping giant, they've decided that, you know, they're going to take over the South China Sea, and they're pushing Japan around right now. In the last 5 years, China's naval vessels, their production and manufacture of them have increased dramatically, and China keeps turning out naval vessels where we haven't turned out one in the last 5 years. How's that? So now, if we're going to save our asses, over in the Pacific, in the South China Sea, where China's making a lot of noise, we've got to start appropriating the money, spending the money to build war vessels, naval vessels, because whatever we have, we've kept in the Atlantic, we're protecting Europe and all this sort of stuff. We've got to also work to protect ourselves and Japan in the South China Sea area. And China is going to be ahead of us if we don't hurry up. We may be number one with 3,416 tons of naval vessels, but you've got to remember, they are spread all over the world. China may only have 708,000 tons, but they're only in the South China Sea. So they are more potent and powerful with regard to naval vessels there than we are. Okay. We heard this week, global warming. The United Nations issued a report. We must act now. It will be too late if we do not act now. The whole world must act now. We've got to get rid of carbon fossil emissions, or it will work to the detriment of the peoples of the world. And they, I forget what the number was, but there was a high number of scientists in the world who agree with the United Nations. And, of course, the guys who own the factories in this country, they don't want to get rid of carbon emissions because that means they got to restructure the factories completely. They do not want to spend the money. They don't care. And this is the problem all over the world. No one wishes to spend the money. So let's see what's happening all over the world. China, Beijing, okay? The air in Beijing, the capital of China, is not suitable today for human life. It's a heavy haze, a heavy fog that you can barely see through. This is because of decades and decades of rapid growth of their industry, pumping all that carbon waste out into the air, creating all these hazardous fog levels. They have polluted and tainted the air, the water, and the soil. People wear masks when they go out on the street. Schools are closed for days at a time in Beijing because it's unhealthy for the kids to go out. Beijing is the second worst polluted city, Ray, carbon emissions in the world. Delhi in India is number one. China has been trying in the last several years to turn the situation around. They finally wised up, became aware, our people are going to be dead if we don't do something. We may have a lot, but we still got to take care of them. And they're trying, but they haven't tried enough, and they've got to try more, and hopefully they're going to sit with us, the United States, on this issue as time goes on. Which now brings me to Paris, France. Who would ever think there's a pollution problem in Paris, France? Well, in the city of Paris itself, there is a terrible carbon emission problem. Not as bad as Beijing, but still bad. And what the government decided to do with Paris recently was this. They said on Mondays from now on, only cars with uneven first numbers on their license plates will be permitted to drive. If your license plate starts with an even number, you cannot drive on a Monday. They assumed this would cut back on the air pollution, and they created what might in effect be called a partial driving ban. And it did help. It did help because on the first day they did it, okay, not everyone cooperated. The police gave out 3,000 tickets, but the emissions were down, and interestingly, traffic jams in Paris, and if you've ever been to Paris, you know this, traffic jams were down by 60%. Another little interesting statistic, the World Health Organization, the United Nations again, claims that 13 million people died in 2012 because of carbon emissions all over the world. Well, looks like my show is coming to an end. There's still material I haven't covered, but we'll get to it again next week. I thank you for joining me. This show can be heard on the archive and on YouTube. I know about 2,000 of you listen to it every week in the days following tonight. Remember, I've got a book out there I wrote. If you like this show, you'll love my book, The World Upside Down. The World Upside Down can be purchased on Amazon.com. and BarnesandNoble.com. The World Upside Down by Louis Patron. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to being with you again next week.